Welcome everybody to Squibload Podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Case.
And Case, it's been a little minute since we recorded.
Yeah, it's been a little bit.
But we got some topics to talk about today. The first one I want to get to is, we're jumping right in.
We're jumping right in.
First one I want to get to is a pistol we've been talking about for a while and talking about buying and talking about reviewing on the podcast. And we finally got it. Well, you finally got it.
I got it.
What did you get, Case?
I got a Bodyguard 2.0 in 380 ACP.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
It's awesome.
I like it a lot, too. So, initial reaction, we both just shot 50 rounds through it, which is like first box review.
Yeah.
I really like it. I think of the subcompact 380 guns, by far the best I've ever shot.
All A. If you take it slow, all A.
All A zone. A-zone hits. Yep. At 7 yards is what we shot at.
Yep.
Which I think that's a good, that's an appropriate range to be shooting with that handgun. 7 yards.
How'd it feel shooting it one-handed?
One of the best one-handed guns I've ever shot. I feel that with really small frame 9mm pistols, the recoil is a bit much to be shooting one-handed.
I would say it's a gun where you buy a gun because you want it to be in 380 ACP. You buy it, you think it would shoot like the Bodyguard 2.0, and the problem up until the Bodyguard 2.0 is none of them have shot like it.
Right.
You would think it should be controllable, easy, snappy, boom, boom, boom. It's not even snappy. The 365 is way worse.
The 365 is way worse, which is, I mean, you would expect it because it's 9mm. And that's really what the argument comes down to for me, because, Case, you bought that gun, and it's so good that I'm like, I want one. Yeah. I want one of those guns. But it's 380, and I'm like, do I really need a 380 everyday carry gun? I've got a 9mm and it works.
The only reason I bought it is because the way I work, I have to really, really conceal. And I am going to get hot and sweaty and, like, I need something that's small. I don't want to notice it.
It's more comfortable than your current carry.
The 365, I could definitely feel it
sometimes.
Not like if I was going out on a date or, like, walking around town, I could carry that. Or if it's winter, I'm good to go.
I feel like the Bodyguard, also the frame of it, is very comfortable. I've never felt a gun that small and that comfortable.
It grips, or the frame of it is better than your 365.
I totally agree. Yeah. That's what I was going to mention, is that I think my 365, while still bigger, the frame is less comfortable to hang on to.
I think, did you get all the 10 in your mag or no? You only did 9.
You had a 12-round mag and a 10-round mag.
And we got 9 and 11.
Basically.
Yeah.
I think I did get the 10th round in the very first time.
It's hard to stack them.
But that's, I will say, most modern guns, when you get them, the mags are going to be stiff. The slide's going to be stiff. The guns need to be broken in.
So if you're like a grandpa and you're buying a gun, you're not going to be able to get the 10th round in, probably.
Case, how do I fix that problem?
You shoot your gun.
Shoot the gun.
Or, like, you can load them over and over again and keep the springs under pressure and buy, like, one of those things that will help you get the 12th round in and leave the 12th round in for, like, a week.
Yep.
Take it out, reload it, and just keep doing that week a week.
Here's a misconception about springs. Compression doesn't damage the unloading in, like, compressing and then decompressing them is what, quote-unquote, damages springs over time. But in this case, you want to damage them slightly. So it's easier. So you take some of the... You put some wear and tear on those springs.
We can't completely glaze the Bodyguard 2.0, so here's the downsides. Downsides, it's a new gun. It's hard to get a holster for. It's hard to find a holster that's going to be good. Like, the gun store I bought it at only had, like, bad holsters. There is no customization. You will not be putting a dot on this. You will not be, like... I think the only thing I saw that you can change right now on it is you can put a new trigger in it. You don't need to put a new trigger in it. It's one of the best triggers from the store on a 380 you're ever going to feel. And then you can, like, put a grip. You can put, like, tape on it or something. You're not doing a lot to this, but this is just a gun that you're going to carry with you every day. No dot. No. You're not putting a new barrel in this. You're not suppressing it. But that's not what this gun is anyway, so... But this is just... This is a perfect first gun for a first gun buyer.
I would agree with all that. The one thing I'll add is that, yes, you can't customize it very much because there's not a lot of options right now, but you don't need to for what this gun is. Most weapons in general, most firearms, I would say you need an optic of some kind. But for the ranges at which this gun is designed to be shot, I just don't think it's necessary because you're shooting so close. And the point of this gun is to be compact and small. And if you add more weight and size to it in the form of a red dot, you are actually defeating the purpose of having a gun like this. And then, so the irons are great too.
It's the stiffest gun we probably ever bought, but after 100 rounds, the slide release now works really well. The safety is crazy hard to use on it, but that's fine because it'll get easier.
I hope.
And some things I've heard online that are bad about it is square-tipped ammo, whether it's a flat...
Wad cutter?
Yeah, wad cutter. Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't feed, and that same problem can apply to hollow points because it would be flat just like... So I would definitely recommend, since you're going to buy this to carry it, that's the only reason you would buy this gun, is to carry it every day. I would recommend the Hornady hollow points because they have the plastic bit in there that will make it round like a FMJ, so you will have no feed problems.
Yeah, and for those who may not know, that's a great point. I would also recommend if you're going to carry in a gun like this where it has potential feeding problems with the open-faced cartridges, that little plastic bit is a really good thing to have even if your gun doesn't have feeding problems because it will basically act as a buffer between someone's clothes and their like soft tissue. Yeah. So it will allow the cartridge to have better expansion. And the reason why every hollow point doesn't have those is because it's expensive to
to put a little plastic bit.
Yeah. So, but the little plastic bit, like you've ever seen like a, like the red filling of a hollow point in like a Hornady round, that's what that is.
Yeah.
It's a really good thing to have. And if it helps you, your gun feed, then even better.
Another thing about it is, you should just buy the Hornady because it was $1 less or $1 more, I can't remember, than SIG, and SIG doesn't even have the plastic bit in there. So SIG's kind of just fool of themselves.
Yeah.
They're just making ammo, and they're like fool of themselves, and they think they're the best, so they don't have to include a plastic bit.
I will say, just for the record, that ammo prices fluctuate pretty significantly. So the SIG stuff may be cheaper eventually.
Yeah.
I guess the advice I would give is don't cheap out on your carry ammo and get what you think will work.
Yeah.
Which is the only downside I really have with the Bodyguard, and it's not even a problem with the Bodyguard itself, it's that 380 is not a perfect cartridge. It's not a great round. It has problems. If I got shot with a 380, I would not like it. It would hurt and it would probably kill me. But is it a round that you can trust your life with? And I don't know the answer to that question.
What if you got shot with 13?
Then it would be a very bad day.
Another thing is not only that, but whenever you buy your carry ammo, do not think about it as buying your range ammo. Whenever you buy your range ammo, you want the cheapest so you can just throw it down range. When you buy your carry ammo, you're probably never going to shoot it.
Probably.
You are going to have it in your gun. And this will be the one time in your life, if you ever do use it, that you're going to wish you bought the more expensive box. I mean, I bought a box of carry ammo for my 365 like 2 years ago. And it's still just been sitting there doing nothing. But I bought the most expensive one because it's the best. Bought Hornady.
Yep. And I mean, different carry ammos for different guns, right? So for my carry gun, I have Civil Defense or Liberty ammo is the brand. And it's the Civil Defense. I think it's Civil Defense is the name of it. But they're really lightweight 9mm like nickel plated ammo. And it's super good stuff. And what I did, I do this every time I buy carry ammo. I'll buy two boxes of it. I'll shoot one box to see how it patterns, what the recoil is like. And then I'll put the other carry ammo in my gun. And then like once every 3-4 months or whatever, I'll go and shoot like 5 or 10 rounds of it.
Yeah.
You can't do much more than that because it's very, very expensive. But
here's a little squibload story. One time we went to the range and we put a target down and it was metal. And some guy walked up and he was like, "Can I shoot your target?" And he shot his target with his carry gun. And he shot his expensive rounds at it. And then Sean saw him do that, and he had his carry gun. He pulled it out and just dumped all his carry rounds. And I was like, "Sean, what are you doing? That's your carry ammo."
It was my
carry. And then I realized, oh, he'll just buy another box.
I will just buy another box because the thing is people may not realize different ammo is patterned differently. You could put the same ammo in two different guns and get a different result of just like, well, the sights are slightly off on this gun or the ammo likes this barrel better, that sort of thing. And ammo is the same way. Like, for example, you could take just a normal Glock 17 gin whatever and put two different brands of 9mm range ammo, and it will pattern differently. And carry ammo is like that too. So I will always, like, every couple of months, I don't time it or whatever. It's just, you know, when I feel like it every few months, shoot some of my carry ammo and then refill it if I need to. And you should do that. I get, like, I don't think it's a bad thing if you don't, just because it is very expensive ammo.
I think mine was about $1 $0.10 a round.
That's about...
Yeah, that's $380.
That's actually pretty cheap compared to what it could be.
Yeah.
Like, I think the 9mm ones I bought were like $1.50 a round, something like that, which is like... I mean, you can't be shooting that all the time.
But Liberty's the best.
It's super good.
Yeah.
Yeah, lightweight. It feeds into the gun properly. It works.
And Hornady's probably going to be about the same for a little cheaper.
Yeah, and also it just... It so depends on, like... What kind of round are you shooting? Like, are you shooting 9 or 380?
Yeah.
Are you shooting it out of a rifle? So many factors. Is it like a hollow point or is it like something else? There's so many factors involved.
But Liberty's so expensive that if that's what everybody was shooting at all times,
like you couldn't afford
it. There would never be a word of squib load.
Yes.
Because it would never happen.
Yeah.
There is no way a squib load's coming out of the $1.50 a round.
Yes.
Factory.
Definitely. Yeah. It just works.
Yeah.
I don't know what voodoo they're performing in their factories to make this good ammo, but it's good stuff.
There's probably one guy for every round coming out of there.
Yeah. There's one other brand of ammunition that's like super good, and I have only shot like one box of ammo from them, but Black Hill Ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, they're like, I just feel like their 5.56 is made of sterner stuff than normal 5.56. I don't know what they're doing to that ammo, but holy shit, does it works.
And like every accident you see on YouTube, wherever somebody accidentally gets hurt, that's like a big YouTuber, you know, it's always a reload by a buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in their garage, drunk as hell, just reloading.
Yeah, I gotta be careful with that.
If you go to the range and you see the ammo box and it says 5.56 rounds, I load it while I was drunk watching NASCAR. You better take those rounds.
Maybe wear a helmet and body armor when you shoot those.
But that'll be good training.
That's very true. Yeah. Every round will be different.
Yeah. You'll be like, damn, this guy's crazy.
So final thoughts on Bodyguard 2.0.
Great.
Great. I would recommend this gun. If you want to carry a gun and you're okay with 380, get this gun.
I wish it was cheaper. That's the only thing.
Well, I thought it was, $400, right?
$400. I wish it was $300 to $350, which hopefully, if like it really gets a place of where it is, it will become cheaper.
Yeah.
But it sells out every single week. I got the last one in the store.
I was going to say, I don't think Smith & Wesson is in a hurry to lower their prices with the amount they're selling.
No, like they're not Ruger. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I love it. I think my one criticism of the gun is not even a criticism of the gun itself. It's that 380 is questionable.
Yeah.
It depends on what you want and what your opinion of 380 is. I'm on the fence. I do think that if you have 380 as like a self-protection round, like personal protection, I think you should really practice and learn how to hit small targets because you're going to want to hit people in the T-zone of their head, like the bridge of their nose and like their like the brow. That's where you should be aiming.
For $400, do you think you could get a 365? Probably.
I don't.
You get close, a stock one with no
optics. With no no anything, no holster,
Which is what you're getting with the Bodyguard.
It'd be like $450, $500, I feel like.
Yeah, so you're going to be about the same. That's why I say it should be cheaper.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting a 9mm 365, or that's the top of the line right now, 365. There's other ones that are cheaper than 365, but I wouldn't go below that standard.
Yeah. Okay, so here's an interesting question. What do you think would be more comfortable to conceal, the Bodyguard 2.0? Or the 365, not the X or the XL, just the 365, the fun size one.
Bodyguard. It's crazy small. It's smaller than my hand.
I don't even think it's a matter of opinion. I think, like, factually, the Bodyguard is just
better. I took a picture of the Bodyguard next to the 365, and it looks like a 365 next to a full-size Glock.
It does.
It's crazy.
And you forget how tiny the 365 is.
I don't. And the first thing I did whenever I got home with the Bodyguard was... My girlfriend's not super interested in guns, but as soon as I got home, I showed it to her, and she's like, wow. And, like, you show this gun to a girl, she'll love it.
She'll love it for sure.
She'll be like, maybe I should get a gun. And it's like, yeah, you should. I'll go buy another Bodyguard right now.
Definitely. I mean...
And then she'll never carry it, and you dual-wield them.
Akimbo, Bodyguard, and 365.
They should make a holster for the Bodyguard, wherever it's two of them that you put in. Because that's how small it is.
That would be sick. So here's another question. What do you think was easier to hit an A zone at a target at 7 yards, 365 with a red dot or the Bodyguard with irons?
365 with a red dot every time.
For sure.
Yes.
I will say, though, we both hit the A zone.
Really good.
I mean, pretty consistently.
That's what is the whole consensus online.
Consensus.
Yeah. Online is that everybody just is like, I cannot believe this gun shoots so good.
Right.
But they're all shooting target right in front of them.
But that's what it's for.
Yeah. And then, like, your 365 can hit pretty far. I guarantee if we put it at 75.
I could hit it.
With the bodyguard?
Oh, I don't know about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's where it falls off. But whenever you're right next to targets and you're just plinking them, it feels really good. You're really A-zoned, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, woo! But then the fall off is 25 to 50. Boom. Bad gun.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely, if I take my time with just about any handgun, unless like the sights suck or whatever, right? If it's a well-made handgun and I really take my time, I can hit targets pretty far. Like, I mean, I'd say like 75 yards yeah. with a handgun. But the thing is like for a Bodyguard 2.0, you don't really want to sit there and slow fire and take your time, because this is supposed to be a gun for self-defense and personal protection. You want to like present the gun and shoot in a timely yeah. fashion and hit what you're aiming at.
This will be the final thing on the Bodyguard 2.0.
Yeah.
Is I shot a USPSA match with a 365 and did pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think if I were to buy like 4 12-round mags for the Bodyguard and then buy a holster, and I conceal carry it too, I could go shoot a USPSA match with it. That's how good it is.
I think you could. I think you'd do pretty good too.
It would be the same amount of ammo as the 365.
I want to say we should probably get off to a different topic, but the sights on the Bodyguard are very good iron sights.
Yeah.
For a gun that small, I was very impressed with those sights. Really good.
Next week's going to be Sean bought a Bodyguard.
It might be, honestly. Like, the thing is I just can't see myself carrying it when I have a 9mm gun that I trust a lot.
Yeah.
I like my 365. I trust it.
I'm going to buy a holster and I'll let Sean carry it and he'll probably buy one.
Honestly, if you do that, I wouldn't mind. Like, we'll just trade guns for a week. I'll carry the Bodyguard.
Whoa, who's listening to this? ATF?
Anyway, we're kidding. We won't do that. Okay, Case, what do you think about mini shells in shotguns? Aguila mini shells.
They're like a gimmick, but they're kind of cool.
Yeah.
But like, people love showing like, this gun fits 7 shells, and with mini shells it fits 14. And they're like, yeah, the mini shells might not cycle. They might not do this. But you got 14 of them. That's right. Like a thing.
I feel like every time we bring up shotguns, it's always this. We state a thing, but then we say, oh, but. Mm-hmm. There's always an asterisk to everything we say. Because shotguns vary in quality and performance so greatly that it's very difficult to state anything with certainty.
Yeah.
I think these mini shells are a microcosm of that opinion, mm-hmm. right? Because mini shells in concept make sense. And you're like, yeah, it's less powerful, but you get more capacity. Makes yeah. sense. Well, some of them don't work right. So yeah. that sucks. Some of them work as intended. But is that better than like, for example, is 12 mini shells better than
6
buckshot?
No.
I mean, it depends on what you're doing, I guess.
Or double op buck? No.
I'm like, 3-inch shells of double op buck, I can fit 6 of those in my shotgun.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't imagine a situation in where I shoot at something and I needed more than that.
Yeah, it's like the one gun you don't want to. Everybody wants to put more bullets in every gun, and shotguns are the one gun that you don't need to.
Probably not.
And one bad side of mini shells is you cannot use semi-automatic shotguns with them. You must only have a pump.
Yes.
And even the pumps can mess up from using them because they're so small, they feed bad and stuff. But
yeah.
No semi-auto shotgun, I guarantee you put mini shells in it, it will run.
Right. I mean, I'd be really curious to see, like, maybe we should look up a YouTube video after this or whatever and see, like, if you put mini shell, like, good, well-made mini shells
yeah.
in a great shotgun, like Benelli M4 is immediately what comes to mind
because
that will eat anything. It just works. Would it feed at all? I feel like the answer is no.
It's like an accident every time it does.
I feel like it would be a bad idea.
They do not feed.
I think they even say the manufacturers like put this in a pump action shotgun only.
Yeah, they don't feed. Yeah. They suck. It's just like the size, the amount of less powder,
yeah.
everything about them. And it's like the whole gimmick of shotguns, like we were talking about the Taurus again.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole gimmick of a shotgun is like, oh, well, who cares if you, like, can't hit that or they don't go far? It's a shotgun. You're supposed to be using it close range.
Right.
You don't pick the scenario.
Right.
And that's why you shouldn't base your little pussy-ass shotgun shell off of, it's a shotgun.
Right.
Yeah.
So here's a really good example. I mean, Clint Smith has that really famous quote. He's like, with the right loads at the right range, it will remove a chunk of shit from your opponent. He has that famous quote. That is true.
Yeah.
But it's got to be the right loads at the right range.
There's a right load to put in a shotgun that at 100 yards, you're going to take a chunk out.
For sure. I was specifically going to mention that. Or even buckshot with the right buckshot and the right gun. Mm-hmm. At 100 yards, that's lethal.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hit at least a few of your BBs, like your buckshot, at 100 yards.
And your wad is going to be nice.
Yes. Right? Yes.
But I just think, I don't think they're a gimmick. I just don't think they're that impressive. And if you have a pump shotgun and you want to put a whole bunch of mini shells in it, go ahead. If they're free, I want to go out of my way to buy them and load my home defense gun with mini shells. But they're super fun. I do not want a shell like this to disappear. I want people to innovate and do cool things. It's just I'm telling you, don't make it your main thing.
For sure. I mean, I kind of view mini shells in the same way that I view those like fun, what are those like, what's that, those custom slugs that you showed me?
Yeah. There's this YouTube channel where people make custom slugs and they just send them to them and they shoot them. And like, they're really cool, but like, they're not gimmicks. Like, some of them are better than slugs, but they're really expensive.
And some of them are just for fun. Like, they're kind of just funny. Like, there's one that's like a trident.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just for fun. And there's nothing wrong with like having a fun
there's thing. One where they just, everybody knows about coin shot. There's one where they just put a whole bunch of dimes in front of it and they shoot dimes, you know?
Which
is, there's this analogy that's like, in a world full of Ferraris, there's tractors. At any given point, like a Ferrari might break down and you have to go take it to the shop and get it fixed. At any time, there could be a tractor working and you like do barely anything to it and it's going to keep working. And that is the shotgun.
Yeah, no matter shotguns what, work.
You can feed. If you said that you could take a 9mm round and just cut coins up and put it in there and shoot it, people would think you're insane. With a shotgun, they'd be like, that might be a good idea.
Right.
It's just a plastic thing that holds weird shit in front of it and shoots it down a tube.
It's not rifled, so you can... I mean, that frees you up to do a bunch of weird stuff like that. I think mini shells kind of... At first, like when I... For a long time, I've thought that mini shells fall into the category of they're like a fun thing to put in your shotgun to mess around.
Yeah.
And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the more I thought about it, and this is a question I would need to research and really consider, but I do wonder their one practical use, mini shells, it could be that if you are shooting a drone, is a mini shell powerful enough to take down the average drone that's carrying a grenade? Is it? It might be.
But you'd have to have a pump.
You will definitely, but here's what I'm thinking. So you could have a pump shotgun filled with like turkey loads. Mm-hmm. And let's say you have like an 870 or something and you got like six rounds in the gun. Or you could have 12 mini shells and each round individually is enough to shoot down a drone with a pump shotgun.
Yeah.
Like I feel like the mini shells in that case might actually be good.
One of the first things that they like invested in though in the Ukraine war was getting their shotguns to be semi-automatic to shoot down drones.
To shoot them better? Yeah.
Yeah, it was like the first thing because it was like they were missing. And it was like, I'd rather have everybody have a pump shotgun than certain individuals have a semi-automatic shotgun.
Yeah.
So they're already dumb for doing that. But the fact that they like immediately went straight into getting semi-automatic shotguns is very interesting.
Right.
They love them.
And if that's the case, like if that's the military doctrine of we need a semi-auto shotgun to shoot down drones, then the mini shells would not be useful for that.
Yeah. One of the ones that they were like, the Ukraine military is trying to buy this gun was like a bullpup semi-automatic shotgun. It was horrible.
An interesting idea. I can see the problems with that.
It failed immediately.
I bet it would. But it's an interesting idea. Bullpup shotgun, maybe not the best idea.
The one thing you shouldn't bullpup.
Yes. Well, I mean, I would argue that there's a lot of things you shouldn't bullpup. Have you seen the Lynx AMR?
Yeah.
The 50 caliber bullpup?
Yeah.
Jesus, man.
One of the greatest memes whenever you learn a lot about guns is, like, making memes to send to your buddy, like, it's a bullpup. Like, the jet, that's a bullpup.
A jet is a bullpup,
Like, the A-10 Warthog is a bullpup. Uh-huh. Yeah.
The it's fire control like, group is...
It's like, ooh, you think this is cool? And they'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, it's a bullpup.
That's funny.
We bullpupped your revolver.
Oh, God. Those are crazy.
That one's awesome.
There's a weird handgun. You can probably look up a forgotten weapons thing. But it's like, it's technically a bullpup because the trigger is in this weird spot in the gun. It's awful looking.
The requirement to be a bullpup is that the trigger is in front of the magazine, right?
If I were to be more technical, the fire control group needs to be in front of the magazine. Like, mm-hmm. the action is behind the fire control group.
The whole point is to make the barrel shorter with the same result. Or to move the barrel farther back
Yeah.
But with the shorter gun.
Make the gun shorter overall, maintain the same barrel
length. Less stock, yeah. More barrel.
Yeah, basically.
Handguard is the fucking trigger.
Okay, so next topic, Case. There's been videos of Marines in boot camp using a Mantis in their rifles.
Yes.
What do you think about the Mantis dry firing system being used in boot camp to train Marines?
Okay, so I bought Sean the Mantis system, and then, like, we bought it before it really took off, and now it's everywhere.
For a rifle.
Yeah, for the rifle's the best one, and then you bought the second one for the Glock, which we're going to talk about the rifle one only.
Okay.
But the rifle one is, like, one of the greatest ideals ever, and back then it was pretty cheap. It was, like, $200, and basically it resets your trigger, and it also shoots a laser out of your barrel, so you can see where you're hitting, and reset your trigger so you can just dry fire like crazy, like you have unlimited ammo. Practically. And I remember in boot camp, you aim at a barrel that has dots on it, and you have to, like, rack your rifle every time. And before, I had never really shot a lot in boot camp before I got to the rifle range, and it took till I got to the rifle range to understand what they were talking about when they said resetting a trigger. Mm. With the Mantis system, if you have, there's only one, and there's like 30 recruits, so they pass it around, but with the Mantis system, you can see what resetting the trigger is without, like, getting confused and somebody watching you. Mm-hmm. And, like, you can learn what it is. And then, also another thing is they make you do a function checks in boot camp. And I remember in boot camp, they, like, have a whole thing that you have to remember to understand how to do a function check. And then after I got out of boot camp and learned a lot about guns, I realized it's just making sure your gun fires, resets, and then it fires and resets on burst. So that's the two. And then you put it on safe and you pull the charging handle back and you try to fire it and it doesn't fire. That's a function check in the Marines. And I was like, obviously you can do that with any gun.
Right.
And, like, whenever you're just getting trained in the military, you're just a dum-dum who remembers the ditty. Like, it's hard to do.
Right.
I can do a function check on any gun now, wherever you check if it fires and if it doesn't fire on safe. That's all it is.
Yep.
But they simplify it, and because they simplify it, you don't really learn what resetting a trigger is, which really changes how good your shot will be at far ranges.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really important that they're using this Mantis system.
I totally agree. It's a great beginner tool, and it really doesn't matter if it's the Marine Corps boot camp or if it's the person who's just bought their first gun.
Yeah.
Dry firing is always good, and a tool that enables you to dry fire more effectively is a great thing. There's really not much more to say about it other than good.
I mean,
good that the Marines are getting trained better. You know,
I just wanted to give a little shout out to the Marines. But we can touch on also, like, if you're hanging out with somebody and they're into guns and you think they're, like, not into guns or whatever, like, if one of the first things somebody tests whenever you give them a new handgun is the trigger reset, they're into guns.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yes. Because people will...
I love a good trigger reset.
One thing I hate, this is like an elitist take of mine, but one of the things I hate is when, like, you are showing somebody a gun and they feel it and they go, oh, I like the way this feels in my hand, or, like, the grip is too blocky for my hand.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, if those sorts of things are what you focus on, you don't know how to shoot.
Yeah. It's like, how does that trigger feel?
Yeah, the trigger, the sights, those are the important things.
And the reset. The reset?
Yeah.
If you could have, like, a crazy good trigger pull and be holding it back and you reset the trigger, and then you pull off, and it's just super long.
Yeah.
Like, super long.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, ooh, that's a bad trigger reset.
Yeah, that's one of the problems I have with the old M&P triggers, is that the reset on them is not great. The actual trigger pull is fine, but they reset in this kind of awkward place. And there's a wall between you and the next
pull. It kind of supports just slamming it.
Yeah, it definitely does. You can get lazy, and your trigger finger gets tired, and then you're kind of just, like, slapping the trigger, which is obviously very bad. So.
Yeah.
So good on the Marines. You know, this is interesting to me because I wonder if the Army is also doing it. Do you know?
Army probably does. But I just saw, like, one video of them using it. And the fact that, like, at least one Mantis system is out there.
Perfect.
They're going to, as soon as they see how good it works, they're just going to fucking get it on every range.
Right.
And, like, you have, like, five range coaches there. And if all five of them have one and it's going between all the different recruits for each platoon, like, they're all going to get to use it. And they had, like, this crazy big system that was, like, you had fake air rifles that had CO2 in them that would show you what it was like.
Yeah.
And it was, like, the Mantis is $200, and it's better than those systems.
Right.
You don't need a giant 3D printer screen that tells you where you're hitting.
Right. Which is a little weird. Yeah. I think that it's interesting to point out the Marine Corps is generally 10 to 20 years behind the other branches in terms of like their technology. But because they're smaller, it enables them to try new things more
they're
easily.
They're always the best with less.
Definitely. That's what I was going to say. Like their mentality and their training is almost always better because they are training a smaller group of people and that allows you to be more specialized.
And I'm not saying they're better than every other branch. They're better at warfare, but the Navy's the best at boats, best at submarines. The Air Force is the best at planes, best at helicopters, best at everything. The Army's the best at making bases wherever you go.
And you could even get more granular than that. It'd be like the Marine Corps is better at the military.
Killing people.
Well, but I was going to say the conflicts that we've been having over the last 20 years where, like, I mean, how many troops at any given time were deployed to, like, Iraq, for example, like in 2010 and forward? Yeah. Not that many. So you'd want Marines instead of, like, Army guys there because you can only, like, you only want to send, like, 5,000 guys.
Yeah.
That's a good reason to send Marines, right? Yeah. That's just an example. But, like, World War II, the Army was really useful.
Yeah.
Because that was, like, hundreds of thousands of guys.
They didn't take all those islands.
They did not take... That was the Marines.
That's right.
But how many guys can you fit on a small island?
Doesn't matter. We took those islands. Yeah, you're saying it's a small amphibious force.
Better
almost
to
what Marine means. Let's go.
So you can just get granular with it. Anyway.
There was a... Well, I'll bring up one more thing. In Trump's first presidency, before the big pullout of Afghanistan, which was bad. Who cares? I do care, but I'm saying, like, it didn't go well and all that stuff, so it gets a bad sighting. Before that, there was an attack where an embassy got attacked, and Trump, there's, like, a whole embassy getting attacked by, like, a big group, and they thought there was going to be a protest and all this stuff, and Trump said he was going to send 35 Marines. The 35 Marines showed up, the protest stopped, and everybody left.
Nice.
That's all they need to hear.
Yeah.
We got 35 Marines. They're going to show up.
That's pretty cool.
They showed up. They hit the wall. It was gone in a day.
That's pretty sick.
It was sick. Yeah.
I think I don't want to get into this topic too much because it's almost veering into politics, but I feel like the U.S. military, it's like we're treating everything with gloves, and the second those gloves come off, it's game over.
Yeah, it always is.
But the gloves need to be kept on because it could otherwise escalate stuff. And I just feel, I think of like the special forces units from like 2007 to like 2013, the crazy shit that they did. I mean,
was the gloves off?
It was the gloves off.
Yeah.
And it solved so much problems.
Slaying bodies.
Yeah. The damage that was done to certain groups and individuals that they needed to do damage to was all done.
Yeah.
But then as soon as that phase was over, the gloves got put back on and troubles came back up
again. People always think of the special forces as like they're just the best, they shoot everybody the best, they're the greatest ever. What the special forces is really good at is using the whole military.
Yes.
The special forces is allowed to use all the military.
Yeah.
So they show up, they set up base, and then if you like look like a combatant, they will blow you up. They'll blow you up with a radio call.
It's easier for them to do it than, like, an Army corporal, you know?
Or
specialist, I guess.
Corporal's and they're, like, specialists at it. They will go sit somewhere, and they will just blow you up with air support the whole time.
Yeah.
You're fucked.
So, anyway, we got kind of off on a tangent there, but Marines training better with the Mantis is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd reckon that the Army is probably doing it in a small number as well, but that's a really good thing. They should be using those tools, so... Okay, Case, slightly, we're changing gears here a little bit, but so this is for our civilian shooters, and I guess anyone in the military, too, who just shoots in their free time, but when you're packing a bag for the range, you're going to go shoot at a range, what should you have in your range bag?
Always ears, eyes, ammo. Your gun needs to be in a safe case. That's for the range requirements.
Yep.
I would recommend an extra pair of ears and eyes for if you bring somebody.
Definitely.
I would say targets, I would say something to clear your barrel.
Yep, cleaning rod is great.
In case you get a squib load or
any sort of malfunction.
I would say like a screwdriver that can, or like a screwdriver kit that can fix and take off any screws on your gun, optic, lens, like glasses cleaner. If you have an optic, I would say a Sharpie or a pen, so you can mark your shots, and just a notepad.
Yep, I would agree with all that. The only thing that I would add is I usually bring a roll of painter's tape with me.
Yeah.
Because that you can cover up shot holes with it easily. And then also, it's just good to have tape with you in case like you need to cover something up or like you want to like underline something in your notebook. Like tape is a good tool to have. Definitely agree with like a screwdriver for any optic screws you might have. Cleaning rod is essential. Pen and paper is great. Eyes and ears, all that stuff, exactly what you said.
Maybe like binder clips in case you need to put your target back on or whatever you use to put your targets on. And then if you're shooting a USPSA target, which is cardboard or any cardboard, and you have money, you can buy one of those tape rolls that is the little...
It's like a gun.
Or not the gun, but just the rolls that are the same color as cardboard, so you can patch your holes.
Shot pasty.
Yeah, shot pasties. Or you could just take them every time you go to a USPSA match.
Other things, yeah, that's true. You could just steal them.
I mean,
we've never done that, but
I definitely have never.
We've never stolen anything. The other thing I would recommend, and this is dependent on where you're at, but I always bring spare batteries.
Yeah, for your ear pro.
Ear pro, if you have electronic ear pro, or like for your optic, like I always have a spare. I have a spare watch battery and a spare like AAA, like a few AAA batteries in my bag. Mm-hmm. I always bring that stuff. And then this kind of goes without saying, but never a bad idea to bring any medical supplies.
Yeah. We missed a big one.
Well, that's the thing is I have that stuff in my car. That's not necessarily a range bag. It just depends on what kind of if you're in an indoor range, probably good to have a tourniquet with you. But also, the indoor range probably has that stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Also, if you watch a YouTube video and they're like, what should you bring for your range bag? And the first thing they bring up is medical. And, like, you got to spend $100 on medical.
Turn that video off. You don't have to. It's definitely... like I said, it depends on where you're going. If you're going to shoot outdoor, like on public land, like for example in Arizona,
bring medical.
You need to bring medical because there's no one around you
to save you,
and you're on your own. So bring medical.
But whenever they like bring up that like you need to spend all this money on medical, that's the most important thing. It's like no, it's not. The most important thing is to know weapon safety and know how to fucking not shoot yourself.
Yes.
Or not be a fucking idiot. If everybody knew how to do it, no one would probably need medical.
In the business, they call that preventative care.
Yeah.
So
medical care is OSHA.
Yes, definitely so. I bet comment on this podcast if you have anything on the range bag that you bring that might be a good idea.
Yeah.
I want to hear it. Optics wipe is another really underrated thing. Even if you, like, for example, you may say, well, I don't have an optic on my gun, so I'm not going to bring a wipe. What if someone else needs it?
Yeah.
It's good to just have stuff in case someone else, or like extra eyes and ears. Whenever I go to the range by myself, I always have an extra pair of eyes and ears.
Yeah.
Because what if mine breaks or something? And then also, what if someone is there? I have this horrible story. This is why I always bring an extra pair of eyes and ears. But one time I was at the range and there was this guy there with his daughter, and he was shooting like a deer rifle, like a bolt action, really loud deer rifle. And he didn't give his daughter hearing protection.
What?
So she had her fingers in her ears, and she must have been 6, 7 years old.
You'll get used to it.
And he was just like, yeah, put your fingers in your ear. That's what he was telling his daughter.
Yeah, we got ear pro right here.
And
I'm holding up my two fingers.
Horrible to do that. Not safe at all. So I went over to her, and I was like, do you need hearing protection? Of course her dad was like, you don't need to be talking to my daughter. And I was like, I gave her a pair of headphones.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And I think that guy got kicked out later because an RSO was like, you can't be in here with like your kid with no ear protection.
Was he wearing hearing protection?
He was.
Oh, so he's just a bad guy.
He was, a horrible father.
Oh, my God.
But I gave that little girl a pair of headphones, and that was bad. So I always bring an extra pair of ear pro. I just by chance had it that day, but that was a bad day. But anyway.
We'll end this one with range tip. If you have a whole bunch of mags and a whole bunch of ammo, fill all your mags before you go to a range to maximize your time.
Yep. It's always good to load stuff before you get to the range.
Yeah. You don't want to be on the line looking like an idiot.
Yep.
You want to throw 15 rounds down quick and be like, okay, now I got to load these.
Case, should you learn CQB?
I would say, since it's free, you can. Do not watch a shitload of YouTube videos about it. You can. They're free also, but I'm just saying, like, just know your own house and do it yourself, and then go. If you don't think you're doing it good enough, go watch YouTube videos. But if it's your job, you're a cop, you're military, definitely train.
Definitely train and learn CQB. I would say it depends, but the vast, and I mean vast majority of the time, learn how to put bullets where you want them before you get fancy.
There's like three benefits of CQB that are why everybody should learn it. So I guess I will change my thought process. But the first thing that's really important is thinking about where your shots go and what walls they will go through after.
Yeah.
That's the most important. The second one is how to move your weapon around doors and how to, like, whenever you're just shooting a gun on a flat range, you're not thinking about how to bring your gun close to you to go around a door. So that is important. It's like how to maneuver with a gun is another thing. And then the last thing is to learn like a path if something were to happen in your house, or learn kind of your house format and learn like where the spots you shouldn't go. Like if you have a whole bunch of staircases, if you're upstairs and someone breaks in your house, you just stay in the upstairs. If you're in the basement, you can just stay in the basement. But why doesn't that work CQB to military, which is why these videos will trick you, is like, just like Inglourious Basterds, you never want to start a fight in a basement. That doesn't apply to civilians.
Right.
Nobody breaking into your house is going to throw grenades in your basement or camp you out. So there's going to be other things that are added for military and law enforcement that's not going to apply to you defending your house. But learning the way your house works is a good benefit.
It is a good thing. I just think that there are people, I see this a lot, unfortunately, where someone is like getting into guns and they want to learn CQB because they think it's useful.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to say, like, learning more stuff is never a bad thing. I just want to make it crystal clear that you should learn fundamental skills before you get into that stuff, because you will probably never need it. I mean, realistically, you'll probably never get into a shooting if you're a civilian, right? But you should still be prepared for stuff in like worst case scenarios. And I think that the situations in which you as a civilian and you're doing CQB in your own home, it's very, I can't imagine that that's a common occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say defend a strong point in your home with a firearm while you wait for like a police response. That should be like a priority. And then have an elementary knowledge of CQB if you want. Like, understand, like Casey was saying.
You're not
like,
chase them down,
yeah. Yeah, like you really shouldn't do, for the most part, you shouldn't be doing that. But like you said earlier, Casey, if you're a police officer, like if you're a SWAT cop, if there's like a bad guy in a basement, you gotta go get him.
Yeah, it's your job.
It's your job. So that's a situation where you should be learning it. But it's like, is there really a SWAT cop listening to us right now? And he's like, oh, should I learn CQB? It's like, he's learning it. It's his job.
He's already there.
He's already there. So like, we're not giving advice to that guy. We're talking to like the average guy who just bought a rifle and wants to learn.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you probably don't need it. Realistically. It's not to say like, I'm not shit talking, right?
Yeah.
But just, I mean, get good at a different skill that's more useful to you. That's all.
The one interesting thing about CQB that applies to everybody doing CQB is if you're a civilian, if you're military, if you're SWAT, or anything like that, whenever you're doing CQB, it will be the scariest thing you will do with a gun.
Yes.
If you are clearing rooms, no matter how good or how trained you are, if you think you're the best, there's probably like, I think one of the best CQB teams is like the FBI, considered to be the FBI HRT or whatever they are.
Uh-huh.
They are considered to be the best. I guarantee you, the FBI guy who is the best trained in the world, considered the best at CQB, every time he hits that door, and it's for real, I guarantee you he's fucking scared.
I bet.
Because no one knows what's past that door, and then you do that 50 more times.
And also, I really don't know. Yeah. I'm of the opinion that CQB, even when you're the best in the world, like you're SEAL Team 6, you're HRT FBI, you're the best in the world, there is still a pretty big chance that you just get shot by someone you didn't see or who was waiting for you or shooting through the wall. Like, you can be the best of the best and bad shit can still happen.
There's like three things that are also impossible in CQB and no one's figured them out yet. First one is corners, which is number one, and they have kind of figured them out. Number two, staircase. No one knows what to do when you get to the staircase.
What I've seen Army recruits do in training is one guy will sit at the bottom of the staircase and he'll look up over like where the rail would be. And then another guy, like you need two people to do this, but then the other guy will like slowly walk up the stairs and then look like to the where it leads up.
Yeah.
So you're kind of looking at like two angles at once with those two guys. Yeah. But even then, that's not foolproof.
It's just whenever you take CQB that they kind of have figured out and how you can do it really good and stuff. And like if you do it perfectly, you probably will have a really good success rate. All that's great. As soon as you add an elevated position to the CQB, a staircase, it all goes out the window. Like it's no longer good. And like you can look at, like just go on YouTube and type in CQB staircase and like everybody's like, we don't know what the fuck to do, but here's what we do.
Right. And
everything, and usually it's grenades.
I was going to say, well, I wanted to mention the IDF, which I mean,
we
won't get into a huge discussion about them and their tactics, but I will say their method of CQB is like the best way.
Tim Kennedy.
Yeah, Tim Kennedy, a bag of 50 grenades.
Yeah.
If you watch the IDF clearing the Gaza, like the apartment complexes in the Gaza Strip.
Yeah.
And basically what they do is if they confirm there's a bad guy in the building, they'll throw a grenade in every room and then they will shoot through the walls of every room at various heights and just say, well, if there was someone hiding in there, they're not now.
Yeah.
Because we just threw 10 grenades in that room.
Marines did it in Fallujah too.
Yes.
If you think they didn't, they just didn't tell you they did. But they definitely were grenading it. Grenades are so cheap, bodies aren't.
Yep.
So
definitely.
We were definitely grenading the fuck out of everything. Which, whenever Tim Kennedy talked about it, we were goofing on him. And like, there's a difference between having 15 grenades between the whole squad and throwing them in every room you're going to go to. And Tim Kennedy saying he had 50 alone. That's why we goofed on him. He's an idiot.
That was a silly thing to say. But I mean, when you're in Fallujah or you're in the Gaza Strip and you're like clearing rooms, I mean, yeah, do you want to cut the pie and have four guys go in and look over each other's shoulders with rifles? Or do you want to throw five fucking fragmentation bombs in that room?
It's honestly like the only time grenades really work too is rooms. Like they have a lot of things they do well, but grenades are mostly for CQB.
Yeah, the other thing grenades are good for is and you don't really see stuff like this in a modern day, like a little bit in Ukraine, but not really. It's like when there's like a mass wave of people charging at somebody. Like if you're charging a position where there's trenches, you can throw grenades and try to get it in the trench. But even if you don't land the grenade in the trench, it will force people to duck their heads and take cover to avoid the shrapnel and allow you, the attacker, to get closer and charge without getting shot at. That was what they were originally used for in like World War I.
Yeah.
And they're good for that. But in a modern day, you're totally right. Like throwing them in a room where there might be a guy hiding behind something and is waiting for you to round that corner. Like, grenade that room.
One of the funniest things to tell people about is flashbangs.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks flashbangs are really good. It's like, yeah, flashbangs are really good, but we don't use flashbangs.
No, we use frags.
No, we use nine bangs or frags.
Yeah.
And nine bangs are you throw them in and it fucking explodes nine times like a flashbang.
Yeah.
And they're way more quality. Like there's way more nine bangs than flashbangs now. We throw those fuckers in, it's just like,
yeah,
it's nine explosions in a row and they're all flashbangs. And we gotta do a flashbang and they work.
Yeah,
they work really
what
good.
Was your like you got flashbanged, what was it like, how long did you feel the effects of it?
It makes you immediately like have a splitting headache, but you also can't see or feel and you want to throw up.
Yeah.
And some people did throw up, but they fucking work, dude. Yeah. Like they work really good. And it does the concussion. So if you've never been near an explosion, I might have talked about this before, but like in boot camp they do little fake ones and stuff.
Yeah.
Not nine bangs or they're like fake explosions, but whenever a real explosion goes off next to you, the reason they're scary is because you feel the insides of you move. Like
yes.
You, which is why if an explosion is near you, it rips you apart.
It can destroy your organs even if you don't get hit by anything.
Yeah, so these little ones, which don't destroy your organs, but they make your organs move. Imagine you're driving a car or riding a car and you're not watching where you're going and you go over a hill and you feel like the gravity pull you like you're on a roller coaster when you're driving. It feels like that, but it's kind of unsettling. So there's like this like mini explosion next to you and it blinds you and makes you deaf.
Yeah.
And it does wear off kind of quick, but you definitely would be fucked. But it, like, not only that, it also makes you feel like you got, like, punched in the stomach, kind of.
So
not bad.
From
you're like, whoa.
from flashbang detonating to like you being able to be an effective gunfighter, what would you say the time frame is from like detonation to you being back in the fight?
There's different ones, but we got hit by with a basic one, but with a 9-bang you'd be fucked, but with a basic one it's like 15-20 seconds.
15-20 seconds.
Vision comes back and it gives you vertigo and tunnel vision.
Yeah.
So like your vision comes back and you're like, oh
yeah.
And like I see why. Also, by the way, whenever you go to training, you're not supposed to get hit by flashbangs. We got hit by a flashbang on accident.
Yep.
You are not supposed to, like, if you get tased, they make you get tased, they make you get OC'd and all this stuff. If you're gonna be a cop,
pepper sprayed.
Yeah. OC is like the new one. Pepper spray and OC is better apparently, but yeah, they're the same. But we accidentally got hit by the flashbang because we fucked it up.
Yeah.
We bounced off the wall.
Nice.
Yeah, it sucked.
It
was like 20 seconds of...
Yeah, I asked about that because I assumed the answer would be somewhere in the neighborhood of like 30-ish seconds or something where you're just like, you cannot fight.
It might have been 30. It was like... You came back faster than you could.
Yeah.
And like if you were in a situation where you were like... But, I mean, you like couldn't even feel your fingers anymore. Right. Like
yeah.
You were so disoriented, you couldn't feel your body, but you could feel like... the pain.
Yeah.
And like your ears ringing and your eyes. It really fucks your eyes up.
I believe it. I really do. And like, I guess the point I was making is like 15, let's say it was even 10 seconds, right?
Yeah.
That low. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's infinity in a gunfight.
Yeah.
You know, like you're defenseless in that time. So, but I will say, like, imagine a situation where you are hiding in a room behind a bunch of like furniture or debris or whatever.
Yeah.
And you have a rifle pointed at a doorway and you know that guys are going to come through that doorway and you're just waiting with your finger on the trigger, waiting for someone around that corner. Do you think you could still shoot at somebody if they ran to that corner and you'd just been flashbanged?
No.
No? You don't think so?
I just feel like you would be like, oh.
Yeah.
You might like get a few off or like you might just be twitching. Like
right.
Pulling shit.
For sure.
Or like your body reacting normally, but like, dude, it fucks you up.
Yeah, okay.
And those 9-bangs going off, like it's 9 in a row, like...
That yeah, that would fuck you up so bad.
You wouldn't even... After the first explosion, the other 9 or 8 would go off. I feel like you wouldn't even
feel them.
Yeah. But you might. But I mean, like, I don't know. There's a reason they throw frag grenades, though, is because, like, if you block your vision and your hearing, it doesn't work. Flashbangs don't work.
Right.
Like, whenever we got hit, the flashbang was right next to us. I remember there were a couple guys behind us, and they didn't get blinded, but they had the ear problem, but they didn't get blinded. And I thought the blinding part was the worst part because it really fucks up your eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what causes the headaches. But, like, the other guys behind us didn't get, like, hit by it because we were blocking it.
Right.
And then it didn't work as good.
So
imagine they were, like, hiding under a desk, and they just, like, couldn't hear. They could pop up and shoot you.
They'd still be effective in a fight.
Yeah.
At least enough to hurt you, you know.
And, like, people shoot without ear pro all the time and still just keep fighting.
Yeah.
So.
I don't often listen to, like, Navy SEALs and Green Berets, like, on podcasts. I think it's kind of tacky.
Yeah.
But there's one guy... I would really recommend this interview. It's Mike Ritland, who is he has a podcast where he interviews Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
And he interviewed a guy named Mike Day. Mike Day was a Navy SEAL who got shot 27 times in one mission, and he lived. And first of all, incredible story. But also, Mike Day went on, I think, 3 deployments, maybe 4. Mm-hmm. He went on several deployments. He didn't wear hearing protection in one ear. He had an earbud in one ear so he could, like, talk to his teammates.
Yeah.
But then the other ear was just open. And so he was, like, deaf in one ear for the rest of his life.
Oh, like, deaf? Or does he have the ringing?
I think he was, like, had severely reduced hearing in one ear, I want to say.
Jeez.
But he was, like, super fucked up in that one ear. But he needed it when he was there because he's, like, you need to be able to hear stuff before the shooting starts.
Yeah.
With that ear. You can't be wearing ear pro all around. And this was, like, before the days of, like, widely available electronic hearing protection. So it was, like, earplugs.
Yeah.
And that was your only option. And so he had, like, his, like, communication earbud in one ear and then nothing in the other one.
That is one of the biggest advancements is that everybody talks about that. They can't decide if it's bad or not is the new Army helmets.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, the new Army helmets are way better. There's a reason they use them, and it's because of Pelotors.
Yes.
Just snap right on there.
Yeah, definitely.
The ear pro is so important. And you can talk to your teammates in the Pelotors.
Yeah, which is that's so good.
They're all interlocked. They can all talk. It's ear pro, it's communication, and it's right there on your helmet. That's also protecting you from headshots.
Look up.
It's so much better.
I would encourage anyone listening to this, look up World War II veterans and hearing loss.
It's bad.
It's bad.
You ever talk to a World War II guy? They're probably just like,
they can't hear you. Like, I mean, anyone who actually was in a combat role and was shooting guns, they can't hear shit now.
Yeah.
The earliest form of hearing protection in a military was French artillerymen in World War I. They improvised earplugs because they weren't issued.
Yeah.
And this was artillery guys in World War I. Think about that.
Yeah.
They shot artillery all day.
I was in a boot camp, and when I was in boot camp, the range RSO, or not the range RSO, the range, like, I don't even know what they're called, but he walked over to me, and he was supposed to be teaching us how to shoot and all this shit, and we had ear pro in, and he took, like, 2 shell casings from the 5.56 and put them in his ear. To look cool, like he was 5.56 sticking out of his ear. And other guys start copying him. And I was like, man, I'm not fucking doing that. There's a reason we have fucking ear pro in, you dumbasses.
Yeah.
Like, that guy was just trying to look cool. And then I remember I tried to talk to him, and he went, what? And I went, oh, okay.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. He was like, if you just put 5.56 in your ear, like, it works just as good as the ear pro. And you can hear better.
That's not true.
I was like, dude, you're an idiot.
5.56 is too thin. Your ears are too big.
Dude.
Like, the holes in your ears.
You would put the rims, too. Not even the, like, smaller side.
Yeah, you need to use... If you're going to do that, because... Listen, if you are out of range and you do not have hearing protection, you can do that. And it's better than nothing. It's never going to be as good as
actual hearing protection. Remember when we did the cotton swabs?
Yeah.
That was the dumbest idea.
A horrible idea.
Yeah, because you could have just jammed them in.
Yes.
Oh, my
God. Horrible idea. So that's another problem with, like... If you're going to put, like, ammo in your ears, use 9mm.
Yeah.
9mm shells will fit in your ears kind of okay, and they will help, but you're still going to... I mean, that's still not safe to do.
Yeah.
And then also...
Don't do it.
Don't do it. You're putting... If you're using, like, a used 9mm casing and putting that in your ear, God knows what kind of, like, metal toxins you're putting directly in your fucking brain. So don't do that. Like spent carbon and lead and crap. Don't put that shit.
Oh, he's a range coach. That's what I said, range RSO. He's a range coach. So range coaches aren't even the best.
Right.
Like, usually it's the shit bags in the Marine Corps. So that's like, why I was doing that.
Seems like a smart guy. All right, Case, last topic for the day.
Yeah.
Would you rather fight a horse-sized centipede?
Mm.
So, like, when I say horse-sized, like when he coils up and it's like about to, like, strike you.
Yeah.
He's like about the size of a horse, like 800. Oh, God. Like 800 pounds, right?
Yeah.
Would you rather fight that and I give you a lever action rifle that shoots 30-30 with 10 shots?
Yeah.
Or you're asleep in bed and 1,000 normal centipedes get released into your house at night?
1,000 normal centipedes?
Okay. Why?
I would fucking bust out of there like the freak.
So
would this giant centipede would fucking destroy the world.
You do have a rifle.
Bugs are stronger.
That's true.
Like, bugs are super strong.
But you can't scale him up, like, directly. You have to proportionally scale him up. So, like, someone did the math. It's like, if you made an ant the size of a person, it would be able to lift the entire world, right? Yeah. Which is, that's stupid.
Stupid ass.
Yeah. Obviously, it wouldn't be.
They made an ant the size of a person could lift the world.
I may be getting that wrong, but it was like, it could lift some stupid thing. Like, it could lift Mount Everest or something like that, right? Because of how strong it would be proportional, or like if you scale it up.
Yeah.
But you have to do it proportionally. Like I was talking to someone else about this, and they're like, realistically, if you made a centipede or an ant that size, like a human size or bigger.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It would like collapse under its own weight.
Doesn't the ant being able to lift so much not work whenever it gets bigger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's a fun math fact. What's 2 times 2?
4.
Which is not that much more than 2.
That's right.
If you, what's 40 times 40? It's 1,600.
Yeah.
So that's a lot more than when you multiply larger numbers. Yeah. So an ant being able to lift like 10 times its body weight is like multiplying 2 times 2.
Yeah, because 10 times its body weight is like grass.
Yes.
A leaf of grass.
Right.
And as soon as you make it as big as a leaf of grass, now it's a truck.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, well, I mean, even humans can kind of do that. Like if you take a really strong 200-pound man, he could press like over 400 pounds, right? If he's like strong.
Yeah.
But
anyway. That'd only be four times his body weight, though. Or no, it'd be like two times.
It'd be twice his body weight, but anyway.
But well, first off, I would definitely pick 1,000 centipedes because that wouldn't even fill up room, and then I'd run the fuck out of that room. Am I trapped in there with them?
No, they're just
start stomping.
They're just in your house.
Yeah. Dude, that would be an infestation. That would be a problem. But
you'd have to, like, burn your house down.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Wasn't, like, there a time when bugs were huge?
Yes.
And it was because of oxygen?
I got to point out to our viewers, if you are a creationist, you got to turn the podcast off right now because we're about to talk about evolution.
Oh, shit.
But basically, yes, there was an era. I think it was before the dinosaurs even.
It was called the bug times. It's called a bug's life.
Yeah, it was called bug's life.
Yeah.
And all the bugs had really humanoid faces and they were voiced by 90s Jewish comedians.
A lot of them were.
Most of them were. For some reason. Yeah.
And this wasn't the cool one where they fought the termites and ants.
No, it was that was ants, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's ants. That one was way cooler. They went to war.
Bug's Life had Tom Hanks in it.
Yeah, and they were all gay. They like went to the circus and shit. The ants are out there fighting the good fight.
They were.
The termite fucking invasion. They needed that tree stump that they were fighting in. Little did they know the ants had pointy sticks and the termite shot acid.
Here's another fun challenge. If you're going to have a last stand, like a strong point, like a last stand location, try to not name it the Alamo. Try to not do that.
Is that what they named it?
Every doomsday prepper in the world is like, this is my Alamo. It's like, oh my God.
They lost.
They did lose.
The fucking, the ants fought the termites in the movie and they just have pointy sticks and they're way smaller.
Yeah.
And the termites, by the way, termites and ants are pretty similar in size, so it doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
And also the termites like shot acid out.
Do they do that?
Termites don't do that.
I think they just eat wood.
I think like they might use acid to eat the wood, but like they saliva. Don't shoot it out like dragons. How the fuck did the ants win that?
That's a good question.
The ants would have got wrecked.
They would have, yeah.
The fucking termites have flamethrowers.
Termite flamethrower ants. Holy shit.
Yeah, have you watched that scene? It's pretty traumatizing.
It's been a while.
Like, the fact that they showed kids that was crazy. And then right after they defeat the termites, they have to face the grasshoppers.
Or I remember the grasshoppers.
Maybe the grasshoppers were Bug's Life.
The grasshoppers were Bug's Life because they, like, screamed like beasts.
Yeah.
They weren't voiced by people, which is a really weird choice.
And they were, like, freaky ass looking grasshoppers. Yeah. Just like real, like all the bugs in Bug's Life look like cartoon bugs. And then they were like, here's a real fucking grasshopper. This shit's crazy.
And by the way, grasshoppers do spit stuff.
Grasshoppers do?
Or yeah, termites? Grasshoppers do in real life. They spit they like yellow stuff.
Oh shit, they got the movie wrong.
It looks like Hollandaise.
Dude, you know those videos over there, like we showed. They made, like, the World War II people watch Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, they fucking crying. Freaked out.
We should
out.
Make ants watch ants. They're, like, crying.
Shackle a bug to it. Or, no, put an ant on a glue trap and make him watch ants. That. Yeah, yeah.
Holy shit. No, I remember that battle.
What are you doing?
Dude. Okay, we're going to end the pod, and me and Sean are going to go watch the ants termite scene, and we're going to crack up.
All
it's
right.
It's going to be so funny.
Squibload Podcast, everybody. We'll see you guys next week.
See you next week.